Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Good morning. This is Meg Scher from the David M. Hunt Library, and I'm here with Anne Havemeyer, the director of the Norfolk Library. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Meg. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. We're excited to start off this morning talking about the history of our library. So, Anne, I'd love to hear about Norfolk.
Absolutely. The Norfolk Library was built in 1888 by Isabella Eldridge as a gift to the town. She was the daughter of the minister, Reverend Joseph Eldridge, pastor of the town, and she dedicated the library to her parents, Joseph and Sarah Eldridge. But interestingly, she did not name it the Eldridge Memorial Library, as she well might have. She clearly wanted it to be known as the Norfolk Library, a library for the town. So Isabella bought the land, funded the construction, hired the Hartford architect, George Keller, who designed a very unusual building for Northwest Connecticut, brownstone with a red tile roof that I think must have really shocked citizens. But she also bought many of the books, developed the collection, brought fresh flowers daily, and welcomed patrons. So she was much more than just the person who spend the money to build the library. She really, this was her home away from home.
Wow.
And she built, 20 years after the library, she built the Great Hall addition with just beautiful rose windows. She hired the same architect, George Keller, who designed the Bushnell Memorial Arch, for those who may be familiar with Hartford, and the same stained glass artist. So it's a wonderful big space where we have our concerts and films. And I just thought of one interesting fact that you might enjoy hearing about and the listeners might enjoy hearing about. The first librarian was Isabella's nephew, and the librarian's living quarters were upstairs here at the library.
Huh.
Thank goodness that is no longer the case. Now there are offices. But after her nephew, a series of young college graduates served as librarians. And one of the interim librarians who served between the college graduates was Belle Maltby, who was the librarian at the David M. Hunt Library in Falls Village.
That's right. How funny. I didn't know that. What a fun connection.
We have a connection. And the other quick fun story I wanted to mention was that our longest-serving librarian, Philemon Johnson, in the early 20th century, was the center of a scandal when he unexpectedly disappeared in 1917, leaving a note suggesting he was going to take his life on Canaan Mountain.
Oh, God.
Only to be cited 3 years later in Alberta, Canada, where he had been living under an assumed name with a new wife.
Wow!
So fortunately, we don't have such scandals today, but these are really fun stories. I've written a book about the history of the library, so I like to include stories that are a little unusual and of interest, I hope. And how about the Hunt Library?
I'd love to hear more about it. I love that story, Anne. That's such a good one. So the Hunt Library opened its doors in 1891, and we also were funded and founded by women. So the story, as I understand it, is that the town wanted a library, and they went to the Hunt sisters. Originally, there were three Hunt sisters. At this time, there were only two, Catherine and Wealthy Anne. I believe Harriet had passed away, and they were living in Bridgeport. Originally, the Hunt family, there were three sisters and a brother, David Morgan Hunt, who the library is named after. They lived in the Huntsville section of Falls Village with their parents, and their parents passed away, and the siblings, all four of them, never married. They never had children, and they lived together in the family house, which still exists today. David Morgan Hunt became an iron magistrate, I guess you could call him. He made back a lot of the family money. He also served in the state legislature. He was a very well-respected person in the community. And at the age of 43, he died of, it wasn't diphtheria. What was it? Maybe it was a stomach virus. It was something that, you know, these days wouldn't kill you. And everyone was devastated. And they tell the story that he's buried on Grassy Hill Cemetery on Route 126. And they say that the funeral procession, wrapped all the way through town. It was so long.
Wow.
So after he passed away, the sisters moved to Bridgeport, and they, you know, he left all his money to his sisters, and they were involved in philanthropic things like orphanages and other supporting other common, you know, civic good. Mm-hmm. And the town decided they wanted a library, and they thought maybe we'll go ask the Hunt sisters if they'll fund it. And so they took the train down to Bridgeport, and they talked the sisters into it. And I believe that the original amount was $7,000. It was something like $6,000 for the building and $1,000 for the first collection. So the Hunt sisters also, yes, did the building and the collection. We have some of the original collection still here today. But something I recently learned that I thought was so interesting, we had always assumed that the Hunt sisters insisted on calling the library after their brother, but I recently learned that that was not the case at all, that the town decided to name the library after their brother.
So you could have been the Falls Village Library.
Yeah, or it could have been the Hunt sisters library.
The Hunt sisters library. That would be amazing. Where was Huntsville in Falls Village?
Huntsville is on Route 63 on the way towards Torrington. So there's a little bridge, and there's a couple of houses. The house that the Hunt sisters lived in is white. It kind of has a fence in the front. It's on the right.
Nice.
And they used to have their own schoolhouse and a furnace, and it was a really, you know, hopping part of town.
Yeah. Actually, Norfolk was like that, too, in that we had several hamlets, which are really no longer hamlets, because there's no longer a school there or a factory or whatever. But
And the one other thing I just wanted to say about the Hunt sisters that I really appreciate is that they insisted that there be women on the board of the library at all times.
Oh, that's neat. That's
Neat. And at 1891, that was not necessarily assumed. In fact, it probably wouldn't have been assumed. And so that was a big deal at that time,
absolutely,
that they made space for women in the library. And we are officially named the David M. Hunt Library and School Association. The original library was on the second floor, which if you come visit us, you should see. It's partially our book sale, and it's also our quiet workspace because downstairs can get a little rowdy. And it's beautiful with all this original woodwork, and downstairs was a school, and it served as a school in various capacities, holding overflow from Kellogg or when Kellogg was getting built, for quite some time. And I have patrons who come in and say, I went to eighth grade over there by the mysteries, or
that's wonderful. That's
wonderful. So I love that this building has served so many purposes for our community throughout the years.
It's interesting about the connection with the women in that the Norfolk Library, similarly, when Isabella passed away in 1919, the leadership of the library was handed to her sister Mary, and after Mary passed away, to her sister Alice, and that went all the way until about 1940, but then Alice's daughter took over, and really it was a family leadership until really the 1960s. They kept tight control of
That's
the Norfolk
Library. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh. I love that. So when Anne and I were planning today's chat, we were both at the Connecticut Library Association conference. At the end of April every year, the Connecticut Library Association throws a conference for all of the librarians, public, school, municipal, in the state. I think there's probably 700 librarians there. It takes place in Mystic, Connecticut. And we were both there, and Anne thought it would be interesting for people to hear about some of the things that we learned about or discussed or found out about at this conference. So, Anne, why don't you share a little bit about your takeaways, and then I will.
I will. The most interesting session, initially they have a keynote speaker who spoke about AI and its impact on libraries, and I thought that was interesting. I won't synopsize that because there's a lot to say. But one of the breakout sessions I attended was about Senate Bill 1234 that was recently passed by the Connecticut General Assembly. And that is a bill that enables libraries to negotiate fair contracts with publishers for e-material, moving away from the restrictive contracts that they now insist that libraries sign. So under current terms, imposed by the big publishers, libraries pay up to five times more than consumers for an e-book, only to lose access after 26 checkouts or 2 years, which is, it's just crazy. The prices are astronomical, and mm-hmm. the terms hinder access for underserved communities and for, you know, people, libraries who can't afford that. Mm-hmm. So the hope is that other states will adopt a similar measure in sort of a national movement to boycott these restrictive contracts. Mm-hmm. And the hope is that publishers will move away from exploitive practices and bring the pricing more in line with what it should be and more affordable for public libraries. So I thought that was a very interesting session. Did you attend something that you want to share with?
Sure. Yeah, and actually now is a great time to share since we just got great news yesterday.
Exactly.
So Anne and I actually both went to a session on digital navigation. So people may know that the seven libraries in the Northwest Corner have been working together on a digital navigator program for the last 3 years. We thought we were going to get state funding. That funding fell through. And yesterday, we just received word from the Foundation for Community Health that we will be receiving funding for 3 years of a regional digital navigator pilot program. So these seven libraries, all the libraries in Region 1 and Norfolk, will be sharing two digital navigators who will be on hand in libraries for a certain amount of time each week to help patrons with all of their technology questions and issues. It's a really incredible program, and we've seen it done at other libraries, but as far as I know, we're the first one that's going to share regional navigators. So we went to a session with the two digital navigators from the Wallingford Library, these two enthusiastic, smart, wonderful young men from Wallingford, and they talked about the work they do and how they've seen it change and how they track their data and how they figure out what people need. And it was really wonderful and gave us a lot to think about as we move forward. So sometime over the summer, we'll be hiring two part-time digital navigators, and hopefully by the fall of 2026, we will be rolling out this program. And we hope to also offer some training materials for people and group classes, and we're really excited about bringing this to the Northwest Corner.
It's so exciting. The Wallingford navigators were really a dynamic duo, but they have said that they are fully subscribed with appointments, daily appointments, year long. So it's a real
incredible
need for people. And we are excited to bring it to the Northwest Corner.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, Anne, what have people been requesting at your library?
People have been requesting an interesting selection of books. Nonfiction, Strangers by Belle Burden. I have not read it, but
I enjoyed it.
Did you? Okay.
Yep.
It's a memoir, I gather, about a divorce.
A marriage falling apart, yep.
A marriage falling apart, exactly. On the fiction end, we have sort of usually popular Fern Michaels, The Final Storm, and then Yesteryear by Carol Claire Burke, mm-hmm. which I gather is also, it's not also, it is a book about what they call trad wives?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
which
I haven't read that one yet.
It's a hot topic these days.
It is, yes. Yes.
How about you at the Hunt Library?
We have people looking for London Falling, the new Patrick Radin Keefe book. Mm-hmm. And The Correspondent by Virginia Evans continues to be incredibly popular. I can't keep it on the shelf.
Yeah.
And Anne, what have you been reading recently that you enjoyed?
Recently, I've been ensconced in novels about Japan.
Oh.
I know, because I actually was fortunate enough just to take a trip to Japan. One of my favorites, which is not technically about Japan, but it takes place in Japan, Korea, and in this country, is Flashlight by Susan Chua, author of Trust Exercise. It was just, it came out last fall, and it was shortlisted for the Booker and the National Book Award, and I just loved this movie. It's historical fiction about a small family, and it takes place over at least one generation in Japan, Korea, and this country, as I said. And it's actually a page-turner. It's a bit of a mystery because the father disappears suddenly on the beach. The only thing left is a flashlight, and he's with his 10-year-old daughter who washes up on shore, and the father is gone, and you don't know why. So I won't spill the beans. But I highly recommend it. It was really a great read.
Oh, nice.
How about you, Meg?
So I've been really into short stories. There have been a number of great short story compilations that came out in the last month. So Lauren Groff has a new one called Brawler that I really enjoyed.
And I love
Louise
Erdrich.
Yes, me too. And Louise Erdrich, it's like two of my favorite writers. And Louise Erdrich's Python's Kiss is actually a compilation of short stories written throughout her career. And they really differ. And one of my favorites, I can't remember what it was called right now. I'm trying to get my short story club to read it. Maybe it's called Dominion. And it's about what if the afterlife was corporatized and you could buy into different afterlives. And it is fascinating.
Yeah, I'll put those on my list, two of my favorite authors as well.
Yes, and I listen to nonfiction while I walk the dog or do the laundry or whatever. And so my most recent nonfiction listen was The Lost Trees of Willow Avenue by Mike Tidwell, which came out recently and is a book about climate change. And it's very, it's both overarching and talks about, you know, a lot of the different ways that they're looking at adapting and mitigating climate change, things that I didn't know about, which was fascinating and made me feel hopeful. And also really focused on his neighborhood in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and the plight of the big trees in his neighborhood and the ways that we can see the climate shifting and the harm that it's doing by the death of each of these trees, and really examining his trees and his neighbor's trees, and both making it a very overarching look at climate change and a very place-specific, which I appreciated.
Yes, important topic these days.
For sure. And it was nice to know that people are still thinking about ways to solve this problem.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You always have a busy calendar at the Norfolk Library, and what's coming up for you?
We do. We have a couple of wonderful performances next weekend, May 16th. We have a one-woman narrative reading of Ruth Draper's The Italian Lesson, which is a comic piece that was written by this amazing monologist, Ruth Draper, in the early 20th century. And then the following day, on the 17th, on Sunday at 4, we have a pianist coming. We frequently have former Norfolk Chamber Music Festival musicians come inquire about performing in our wonderful Great Hall, which is a great acoustic. And so Howe Gare is coming. He's at the Manhattan School of Music, and he's won numerous competitions, and he's going to give a concert on Sunday. And then briefly, but big for us, we have our third annual Greenwoods Puppet Festival on the weekend of Saturday, May 30th, which we've are welcoming three puppeteers, one of whom is Heather Henson, daughter of Jim Henson.
Oh, cool.
Puppet shows. Yeah, it's a wonderful, you know, we promote it as a piece of art, really. It's not just for children. It's for all ages, and tackles social issues, and it's a wonderful form of art. So we're looking forward to that. How about you at the Hunt Library?
Well, this Saturday, May 9th at 2 p.m., John Dickinson, who's an author and a historian with the Berkshire Historical Society, is going to speak about his new book, Herman Melville in the Berkshires. And I know that we have a number of Herman Melville aficionados in our community, so I'm excited about that. And next Thursday, May 14th at 2 p.m., we'll be hosting Dr. Gail Ridge, who works for the state of Connecticut, specifically around invasive insects. And she'll be talking about the spotted lanternfly, Connecticut's uninvited guest.
Oh, dear.
I know, but it's important to educate ourselves,
absolutely,
even about the things that, you know, maybe we don't want to know about.
That you don't want, exactly. Well, you do have wonderful talks at the Hunt Library.
Oh, thank you. And then
them.
our our big plant sale. We run a homegrown plant sale. All of the plants are donated by, you know, people who are dividing things or growing extra veggies for us. So Hunt's Homegrown Plant Sale will take place the weekend of May 16th and 17th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then whatever's left over kind of continues for the next week through Memorial Day. So that's one of our biggest fundraisers, and it's a wonderful time to get your garden ready, chat with your neighbors, learn about all of our wonderful tomato varieties that are grown by our co-chair, Ruth Jamaro, and it's just a really fun weekend at the library.
That's a great idea. We have a seed library that we've had out for a couple of months.
Nice.
But it's just seeds. It's not, you
right.
have to start from scratch with those.
But, right, but seeds yeah. are good, too. You got to start
yeah.
somewhere.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Anne. It was really fun.
Great. Thank you as well.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.